Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who like to take big pieces of wood and make them smaller. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
All right, what's happening, everybody? It's show number 532, and on today's show, we're talking about Japanese versus Western saws, bit storage, and designing a shop from scratch. But before we get to that, I want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler has been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler is giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Enter for your chance to win before October 31st at rockler.com/woodtalk.
And if you want to help support the show, you can do so by going to patreon.com/woodtalk and signing up to become a patron of the show. Thank you, patrons. All of you. Wow. You still know who you are.
Oh, man. We are so professional in everything that we do.
I mean, fantastic. We scripted all the intro stuff, so that seems pretty professional.
Do we script the blank spaces between the words?
I think
so. That's the white space on the document.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. They seem very deliberate and premeditated.
Very premeditated.
Okay, well, yes, let's get into what is on the bench. And, you know, in spite of not having a shop at this point, I still have projects to do. Moving into a house, a new to us house, means lots of stuff to fix, lots of little repair jobs. But one thing that was not in need of fixing, but because I'm Mark and I have certain priorities, the living room, or the family room, I should say, had a little cubby for the TV. And it was a built-in, and there were shelves on either side, which limited the space for the television. And I was like, you know what? I really would like the whole thing to be for a TV. So I knocked the shelves out. There were two vertical partitions. And this is, I mean, you know how built-ins are built often? It is usually not a totally pre-assembled piece of furniture. A lot of times things are built in place, right? So a lot of the construction methods used are not necessarily conducive to, like, pulling parts out after it's installed. So I'm trying to strategize how to get these partitions out and to open the space up for a TV. And I decided, what the heck, let's make a little video about it. So we will have a video coming out showing how I kind of destroy a perfectly good built-in to make it just a slightly different built-in that fits a bigger TV.
Wow. That was You're a lot still of fun. Making videos, huh? I thought you gave up on that.
Well, then, you know, sometimes you just start filming a house project. Like an actual house project, and call that content. That's what we do.
Hey, it's, you know, like, what? When you refinished your front door,
just like that. You know, I actually sat down and watched the latest episode that you put out, and I hadn't really. I mean, because I'm not that interested. So
yeah,
I don't expect
everybody to watch everything.
I know, and I know you get that, and I know you're not offended by it. It's just the nature of what it is. You got to be interested in it.
Don't.
And
hang on.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got a funny thing. I got something to add to this real quick.
Oh, good.
We did our live stream yesterday with Lindsay and myself, mm-hmm. and one of the things that came up was that Lindsay doesn't watch my videos.
And someone in the comments got really like upset about that.
Really?
And it was very funny. I'm like, what the hell? I don't watch the comments when we're doing that, because I'm trying to like keep the thing going. I went back and looked at it, and she's like, yeah, I had to like ban this person a few times.
Why would she watch them?
Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, this offend me. She doesn't watch them. Like, I don't care. Like, what the hell do I care? Like,
well, especially
but this person was really, really taken aback by the fact that by not watching them, she's not supportive. Is that
right?
It's kind of what their thought process was, but it was
kind of
funny and rude at the same time.
Well, look, the thing is, she's living through it. You know what I mean? Like, why would she then watch the recap?
Right.
Her life is already inconvenienced by this construction project, but now she's got to watch it happen in a 30-minute clip. That makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just funny. Anyway, I thought that was relevant and humorous.
Well, hold on. Let's go around the horn here.
I was going to say,
we also have wives. I can tell you right now that especially with my videos where I'm trying to put like a funny thing, or I'm working hard with Todd on the edit to make this thing funny, I have to ask Nicole to stop what she's doing, to sit down and watch this thing to validate my feelings. And I want her to, I got to see how funny it is. Yeah, exactly. That happens too. Like, can I get away with this? But she is not sitting there watching every episode and waiting for the release. You know, that's not happening. Does Heather watch your stuff, Shannon?
No, I don't think she's watched a single episode. In fact,
she's never even seen it.
in going through prepping the show notes last night, there was a question. I ended up actually not putting it into the show, but it required me to listen back to two or three shows ago, because somebody said I said something, and I was like, I don't remember saying that at all. So I'm actually listening to the show, and Heather walks into the room, and she's like, is that Wood Talk? Like, is that really what you guys sound like?
Yes, it is.
Oh.
Wait, but was that good or bad?
Oh, it wasn't good.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
She's like, really? Like, people listen to that?
This is what you've been doing all this time? That's great.
So, this is what Rockler pays for?
Yeah.
I think it's more out of self-preservation that she doesn't listen or watch any of it. Be like, oh my God.
It's probably for the best.
You really are putting that out in the public?
It really is terrible. Okay. Well, before we got on that tangent, I don't know what I was saying outside of the cabinet project that I did, but
I don't know. You said you saw something in the video or something. I don't know. You watched it for some reason.
Yours. I was talking about your video, not the cabinet. Yeah. Yeah. So I actually sat down and watched it, and I was like, This guy who's putting this house together looks like he could use some help. Too bad there's not another person there to hold that panel for him while he nails it in. It is an interesting thing to watch, though. You guys working together, the bits that you leave in, where like you had to cut a piece that had multiple notches to get the panel in place. And Donovan's calling out measurements. You're on the ground actually making the cuts. It was neat to see the process go together. So I could see the attraction. But you know, not for me.
Not for me.
it was fun.
The people who like those videos really, really like those videos.
Yeah, but they're doing good for you, right? Like they're performing well, and
the interesting thing about it is like my core audience absolutely loves it, and I'll get more likes and engagement on one of those videos than the similar video with the same number of view counts to be doing anything else.
Yeah.
But the only downside to them is they don't have legs. So like they'll hit that initial core audience. They'll love it and they'll watch in the first 2 days, and then they just flatline after that.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting dynamic. Like I would expect them to do better, like out into like the world, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who love it really, really love it and really appreciate them, which is also nice. And good.
There's something unique about it too, because it's not exactly like watching a This Old House episode. It's not that type of presentation style. Like you'll do that as the host when you're catching people up, but most of the like the elapsed time is more of an over the shoulder kind of thing. Like you're watching two guys work, you're hearing the conversation that's happening. This strikes me as one of those things that's a comfort watch for people, where it's not challenging to watch. You know what I mean? You don't have to sit here and think too hard about it. You're just watching a thing being created and two guys making it happen. And it's a very relaxing thing. And I imagine that's what a lot of these people who are watching this story unfold are there for, you know, to get that experience. So
yeah, it's been really interesting too. Like I So I previously to this, I had never done release schedule before.
Mm-hmm.
So now these come out every Saturday, and like the Saturday crew, as we'll call them.
Yeah.
Like the audience has been trained that now on Saturday morning, like this is here and you can watch it, and people get excited. Like, oh, it's finally time to watch it again. Like the first comments would be like, oh, time to watch my show.
Yeah. It's got my coffee. It's a routine.
The routine thing now. It's very interesting.
Got my coffee.
There's Richard out in Normandy. It's like I just woke up from my afternoon nap and there it is every week. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Or he was out doing something because it's, you know, he's ahead in time. Yeah. It's an afternoon release for him, but it's very weird.
It's funny how circular that is, because that's how it was. That's how TV was when I was growing up. You know?
It's not always.
I guess so, yeah. That's a good point.
Everybody gather around the TV to watch Dallas.
It's an event. Yeah. Well, yeah. We've also gotten to the point where people are putting things on video that's just the stupidest mundane garbage. You know what I mean? Like a lot of it should be dismissed. But when there's actually something that is event worthy and it is a big deal for somebody, that's kind of a rarity anymore. Most of what we have out there is just mundane, purposeless garbage. Sorry. That's my Missouri curmudgeon coming out.
Curmudgeon. You're such a curmudgeon.
I am now. Well, look, when you're after your lower regions sweat as much as mine have in the last month, you start to get a little bit pissy about the world.
Come on, man. I sent you that like ball chiller thing that you're supposed to put in your car.
There's all kinds of products. You know what I will tell you? In Denver, we did a promotion with what the heck's the name of the company? The clothing company.
Duluth.
So one of the big things they were pushing were their like Armachillo underwear, which I got. And I'm like, all right, they're comfortable, but I didn't get it. Like it was comfortable, but it was really not that, it was not that different. The material felt different, but the whole point of these things was totally lost on me in Denver. As soon as I got here, I went to friggin' Duluth's website and I ordered like a half dozen new pairs of underwear to go with like the three Armachillos I already had, because there is a night and day difference in my comfort throughout the day here when I'm wearing Armachillo versus wearing just, you know, whatever Fruit of the Loom Nicole bought me. So not to make an ad for a company that didn't pay for one, but oh my God, what a difference in a humid environment. Pretty wild. Okay. Enough about my ball sweat. Matt?
Your balls. Wow. Thanks for the update on your balls. Very appreciated.
Thanks for the ball update. On to Matt for news.
For his ball update. Why you do this to me? Like, as soon as it's my turn to talk,
give like, you something hey, to laugh about.
Let's just like bring him into like some kind of laughing meltdown so that he can't think, speak.
I like to toss
what he's supposed to say.
I like to toss a little Vaseline on the ball before I throw it to you.
Well, what I love is that in the show notes, here. It specifically says we should try to pull in Rockler in our conversations. And not only have we not done that, Mark managed to pull in another company.
That's right. Well, this is why they keep coming back for more.
We've lowered the bar on the content and we've thrown
Rockler is just like hopefully optimistic about things with us.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
We'll go with that. That sounds better.
Well, look, I bought the underwear that I bought, they were blue. Oh, so good. There's the Rockler tie-in.
That's good. Okay.
I think more than likely Rockler listens to the show as much as our wives do.
That's true.
You know, that could
be probably accurate.
That could be it. Oh boy. we'll discover something today.
Matt, tell me about your balls.
Oh my God. Okay. So I think new the segment. Last time we... The ball update.
We need a jingle. We need a jingle.
Everybody's ball update. We're like extra goofy now and extra giddily. That's nice. Okay.
High on this water. Oof. You never know what's in it.
I'm going to try and push through this.
Go we'll for see it. How I'm going to shut up now. I'm going to be.
Yeah. Alive. Okay. I doubt it. So I think the last time we spoke, I was kind of in a similar situation to Mark, where I was looking for a new home for my business. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. We weren't able to find any commercial property to buy or lease in the area. So we went with the nuclear option of let's put a building on our property and use that for now.
Oh,
so we're putting up a pole barn thing, and that will be my physical product business space until I outgrow the space, which we're putting up the same size space as I was leasing the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I was already feeling a little cramped in there. So yeah, we'll see
how far. How far was the other space, the current warehouse?
It was, well, at the old house, it was kind of nice. It's like a 20-minute quick drive down the freeway into downtown. Mm-hmm. And now it's all the way across the entire metro. It's like 40 minutes, 45 minutes from here. Oh,
so this is a good change.
Yeah, so I was already planning on like moving and getting out of there and getting something closer. Because mm-hmm. One of the things that, I mean, it's obvious, but it came very apparent to me that the space becomes underutilized because it's so much of a hassle to go there and do anything. Yeah. And by the time you get there, you're like, God, I just drove all the way here.
Yeah.
And then like half the day's gone already. Yep. And then you get like a few things done. You're like, hey, I'm out of here. I have to beat rush hour to get back. So you can leave early anyway.
Yeah.
So it became very underutilized, which is unfortunate because it's a great space. But I was really planning on like, okay, this has to change. But I wasn't planning on it happening like now. Or so the timing didn't really work out for me too well. But my landlords, they gave me like 6 month notice. So I'm like, it's fine. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I have 6 months. How hard could it be to find something else?
Boy, that can go by fast.
Ugh. Yeah, nothing. Literally nothing. So yeah, we're doing this, we're putting up a big building thing. It should be I've gone through a lot of like emotional distress over this one.
Do you need a hug? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm happy to report that I'm like to the point of actually being excited for this now.
Yeah.
Because as I kind of went into this, like I felt very forced into this pathway, into this decision, and it wasn't my first choice. So at least now I'm to the point, like I'm excited to have the space here so close that I can actually utilize it better. And honestly, just be like to the point now where my life is completely back to, say, air quotes, normal, because I feel like I've been in this transitional flux for the last 2 years since we finally started moving from our old house. So I'm really excited to just like get back to work, as weird as that sounds, because I've been working this whole time. But at the same time, I kind of haven't either. I don't feel like I've been doing that much.
Yeah.
Like business wise, like I kind of want to get back to making guild projects again. And I want to get back to that kind of like normality in my life. Like, okay, I'm making my guild projects every year. I'm doing my furniture things in the shop, and I have whatever's going out in the commercial space going on too. Mm-hmm. And I'm not working in my house.
Right.
And I'm not moving.
So is this a fun thing? I mean, obviously this is very, there's a utility to what you're doing here. That's not quite as fun as if you were saying, yeah, I'm making a new wood shop on the property. So
yeah, well,
Like, is it still fun, or is it just like a means to an end kind of project?
Honestly, it's kind of more a means to an end more than anything. I already know people are going to look at this and see that like that's their dream shop because it's big.
You're going to get that comment many times. Like
it's not my dream shop at all. It's just a utility space for those businesses to operate. Like one thing I'm really happy that I did is I separated the two. Let's say air quotes businesses or like business styles that I have going on. So I have my shop here in the garage, which is a content production space. It is my like creative space and it's where I make videos. Then I have my commercial space, the warehouse, and then now the pole barn here on the property. That's like the get crap done space. I'm not filming in there like that much or ever. And it's more geared towards physical product, whatever. And I don't have those two things getting in each other's ways because they're two separate spaces for two separate purposes. Now they do have some overlap, but like my physical product isn't getting in the way of me filming a video because I have product all over my shop.
Or if you have people helping you, chances are they're not helping in both spaces. So yeah,
that's separate. That was the other thing too, is like separating those two so that if there are employees in either place, they're not like on top of each other messing around with stuff or whatever. Like it's both things can operate individually or at the same time.
Right. That's exciting. When does that start?
They're 3 weeks? The end of the month.
Nice.
Last week of August.
And how much of this is this like you getting your hands dirty or are you hiring this out?
Well, I have hired Donovan.
Again.
Again.
Turns out the only contractor in the area that's available.
He's not even in the area. That's the worst part for him. He's past my warehouse in the other direction.
Oh, poor Donovan.
Wow.
So
this dedication. Are you're paying him well, right? I mean, you have to be.
He eats a lot of cookies. So my cookie budget is through the roof.
He brings the cookies and the milk every day.
That's true. Actually, he brings them himself and then I eat them.
Yeah.
Occasionally I buy the cookies, but normally he picks them up on the way in.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't like, hey, we'll pay you an exposure sort of thing,
oh,
right?
Oh God.
Oh no, this is like, not like that at all.
There's money changing hands here, I hope.
He bills me. Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
So we
early and often, I hope.
We've hired out a lot of the work with this. So all the concrete work is hired out. And then we're just going to do the structure. The pole barn structure, framing stuff, and then the tin sheet metal on the roof and walls and whatever.
Nice.
That stuff.
I can't wait to see it. That's awesome.
Yeah, it'll be I hope it's going to go quickly. I think it should. We'll see. Donovan says it's been longer than I've been alive since he's put up a pole building. So we'll see how that goes. I have confidence.
Yeah.
It's just kind of weird to think like when you're working with someone that has been around this stuff for so long that like they've done this before, but it was literally before I was born.
Yeah.
But long ago enough to forget it. Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to see it come together. Okay, Shannon, what do you got going on?
I had that realization in the like the technical side of my business this week where I've been doing this long enough that I've forgotten how to do things that I used to do every day.
Like this show?
Yes.
Some of that, yeah. Now, I had to put a specific element into an actual web page, a blog post. That tells you how old it is. You know, we all have shows we put out and they go on YouTube or they go, you know, you've got content on Instagram and yes, there is an actual website behind it. You know, no one may ever visit that website anymore, but the YouTube videos get embedded there. And I released a YouTube video. I know, pigs fly. And I was like, how the heck did I do this before? I'd forgotten how to like actually write a blog post. It was scary. Anyway, I was actually really enjoying Matt's conversation because it kind of leads me to absolutely nothing that I had put on here to talk about, but Matt's kind of in this weird transition thing and wants to get back to normal. And, you know, you hear the same thing from Mark, you know, I want to get back to building stuff. I'm in very much the same boat for different reasons, but I've been hearing from a lot of people who feel the same, whether it's just been too dang hot to go work in the shop. So like all woodworking has ceased, or, you know, work has gotten in the way, or a newborn and things like that. There's a lot of people, maybe it's just COVID, I don't know, that's just like thrown people's lives for a loop and people just can't wait to get back to what they do. You know, the last 2 years, I've been doing this and I've been working real hard, but I'm not actually working, to quote Matt, to paraphrase Matt. and I feel like that's a very common feeling. And I'm very much the same way. I've got a whole bunch of projects that have either been started and had to be set aside because of another priority came up, or a whole bunch of stuff kind of on the literal drawing board that need to get started. And I can't get to it because there's too much other things going on. And it's kind of like, I got to finish those up, and then I can get back to normal. And it's getting to the point where it's very, very frustrating. So like, I don't know, maybe I feel better that you guys have this stuff going on and aren't cranking stuff out, because, you know, usually it's like, oh, what's on the bench? Well, Mark finished, you know, 3 projects and Matt finished an heirloom 18th century piece. What does Shannon do? Well, he flattened a board.
That's what you get for using hand tools, man.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what it's been lately. I mean, frankly, my life in the shop, I mean, there's a huge amount of stuff going on at the day job. Let's not forget the fact that I'm training for an Ironman in less than a month. And that certainly has taken some time. And I recognize that once that's over, a lot of that time will come back. But my shop time has really been focused on the hand tool school. And what I'm doing there is it's demonstrations, and I'm filming things in responses to, you know, apprentice questions and things like that. And it's all cool. Frankly, I love doing it. I've said it on the show before. I really enjoy teaching woodworking and kind of understanding how to like make that light bulb moment happen in somebody's head. But it's not actually building anything. So like this, my update, and granted, I put this update in a month ago when we were going to record this show before, but like, what did I do? I cambered a chisel. But there was a whole video, the whole production, and a whole kind of experiment that went into the cambering of that chisel. And I actually put a note in here myself because, unfortunately, we lost David Charlesworth back in May. And it's the first time that we've had a chance to actually record since that happened. But you remember, I mean, David Charlesworth, incredible craftsman, but probably most known for his ruler trick.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of, you know, raising up a plane blade ever so slightly and putting a tiny, tiny back bevel on a plane blade is a way to kind of speed up and increase the sharpening effectiveness of a plane blade. But he was always very clear to say, do not do this on a chisel. So David passed away the end of May, and I'm doing a demonstration in early June in the hand tool school. And the first thing I did was put a back bevel on a chisel. And it was kind of like, I'm sorry. I'm so very sorry. Like, rest in peace, David. But yeah, that's what's my, I feel like my workshop time has become a series of small demonstrations that ideally, hopefully, have a strong impact on like my little hand tool school community. But at the same time, it's leaving me a little bit like, okay, I'm ready to build something. I'm kind of like ready to get back to normal. So anyway, that's just me of empathizing. Big virtual group hug there, because I don't know. I feel like you. It's a very common sentiment in the world.
I needed that.
In general. Good. Glad to hear it.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, in my situation, I've just been doing all the house stuff, which I don't film. There's no content there for the most part, but I've installed tons of outlets and ceiling fans. And we just put in a set of doors in the basement because the doors were rotted out. So like that's all stuff that happened, and I'm tired and my back hurts, but I got nothing to show for it. Nothing to show for it.
Yeah, I guess I need to take my GoPro out on my long bike rides and just produce content there. I'll just become a triathlon channel.
Yeah.
Because that's like 20 hours of the week anyway.
There you go. Good idea. All right, let's get into a piece of kickback here. Tom wrote in and he says, "Woohoo, Rockler is in New Jersey." And he says, yeah, not a question, just a heads up that Rockler's in New Jersey. I probably wouldn't have found out otherwise. So was Rockler not in New Jersey prior to this?
I don't think so.
When did the Jersey store open? We don't work at Rockler, so we don't know that answer. I would have assumed they would have had a location in Jersey like for a while.
Well, wasn't it in one of our mid-rolls that we said that you have a store in there?
Yeah, now? Probably.
And that's what he's saying, is that's how he found out, was by listening to us.
But I wonder how long ago that was.
I'm almost positive they don't, because like New Jersey's not far from me. And they're really, there's not, now there's a Fairfax, Virginia store that just opened. And technically that's the closest one, but I was saying off air, like it's the worst traffic in the country. No, thank you. It may be close, but it's probably 3.5 hours away from me.
Okay.
But like, as I go north, like I've been to the Portland, Maine Rockler. There may be one in Massachusetts, but I've never been there. But I don't think there was another one. If there's one in Pennsylvania, it's like Western Pennsylvania or something. So yeah, this mid-Atlantic region is very underrepresented. I think it's always been a woodcraft market. Maybe that was the issue. Although
you mean the other Rockler
is gone here. What's that?
You mean the other Rockler?
Yeah, sorry. The other Rockler. The green Rockler.
Just to be clear. The green Rockler. It's a good one. All right. Well, if you happen to be in the area and you you're fortunate enough to have a Rockler nearby, you need to go and check out something very special that they have there. You got to go check out their furniture legs. They have a entirely new iSymbol steel table leg set. Rockler made it super easy to build custom furniture projects with this new kit. The trickiest part of making tables is...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Often making the base and the legs, but you can skip that process altogether by using one of these sets of iCymbal steel table legs from Rockler. These welded steel legs make it easy to create functional, stylish tables. Just add a top and the material of your choice. Choose from several heights to showcase a prized slab of lumber. Matt's got some of those. Or the shorter legs to support a custom-made cabinet. The legs are sold in sets and arrive with a durable matte black finish. Whether you're an experienced woodworker or a beginner, these table legs let you tackle furniture projects with confidence. This is pretty cool stuff. Obviously different, you know, stylistically, hairpin legs, welded legs. They've got some bent flat V style legs that are pretty sweet. You got to check this out because if you're building for clients or maybe family members that want these metal legs, sometimes it's difficult to find a source for them. So Rockler coming in clutch with the metal legs.
Coming in clutch.
My dogs are freaking out. They're so excited about metal legs.
Woohoo, metal legs.
Yeah. Since we moved to Missouri, the wrestling factor between the dogs has really kicked into high gear.
Hey, stop it.
Wow.
That's it sounds like they're killing each other, but they're just they're playing, quote unquote, playing. Anyway, Rockler has metal legs. Go check them out. You ruined it, dogs. You ruined it.
the image of tall Abby and short Dougie wrestling.
She picks on him.
I could just see Abby like stepping on his neck saying, stay down, punk.
Yeah, he's high. I mean, he's strong. He's got a good bite on him. But you know, the height advantage is a problem. That's why I could never beat up Shannon. He's just too tall. But Dougie's hiding under my desk. Beating up Shannon is a thought that comes into my mind quite often. I don't know why.
There's a lot of people who feel the same way. I get that.
I've given it some thought. Okay. Let's get to our questions. And yeah, thank you, Rockler, for sponsoring the show. Always appreciated.
Always appreciated.
Shannon, you're up first, I think.
This is from Brent. He said, I've recently started woodworking and I feel myself leaning more towards traditional joinery techniques. I'm about to buy my first set of hand saws and I'm wondering if I should invest in some Western style saws or a few quality Japanese saws. Seems to me the Japanese saws are more utilitarian, with one saw having multiple uses, whereas Western saws are designed for more specific use cases. I'm looking for something I won't hate in 6 months and want to upgrade. So here's the thing. I've never claimed to be a Japanese tool expert. I have used them. And I often say I went to Western saws not because I didn't like Japanese saws. And I think a lot of times it just comes down to a personal preference, like what you vibe with more than anything else. And I like kind of the bling factor of the Western saws. I was always used to pushing my saws. And the idea of pulling them and using them when I was pulling them, there is certain aspects that does feel easier to start, but it just felt awkward to me. So I just went whole hog into the whole Western saw side of things. But you can't deny the fact that, A, Japanese saws are really inexpensive. Well, you can certainly spend a lot of money on a bespoke made by certain manufacturers that have been folded 1,000 times by an ancient master or whatever. But for the most part, the mass market Japanese saws are really inexpensive. I know you can buy them at all the online retailers, Rockler included. You can buy Japanese saws there. And a lot of times you can buy like a set of three for under $100. Or you can buy a single Dozuki for, $35 or something like that. They're really inexpensive, which to me is worth considering. Because here's the thing. I don't think you're going to hate it in 6 months. I still have the Japanese saws that I bought years ago to kind of try this thing out. When I was first getting into cutting dovetails by hand, I was convinced that I had to have a thin kerf Japanese saw because it was so much thinner than a Western saw. And I bought it and I used the Dozuki for a little bit. And as I said, I gravitated more towards the Western saws, but I still have that Dozuki and it still does come out from time to time when I really need a super, super thin kerf. Likewise, I have a Japanese flush cut saw and I use that on just about every project, you know, where you have that need to flush cut something. And I didn't spend a whole lot of money on it. So, you know, there's like nothing, there's no regret, no buyer's remorse there at all. So I hate to have somebody straddle the fence this way, but it's worth trying both. If you're getting started into this, because I think you may find that one just resonates with your style. One works a little bit better for you. The problem with the Western saws is if you're buying new, is that's not a cheap prospect. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, you go with something like Veritas, which has some inexpensive hand saws. However, I'm not a particular fan of the Veritas hand saws. There's some weird tooth geometry stuff going on there that I think actually ends up hindering you. So if you were to try a Veritas handsaw and a Japanese handsaw, you probably would end up going Japanese because I don't like the performance of those Veritas saws. And that may be, I hate to say you get what you pay for, because obviously Lee Valley and Veritas is a very premium brand. There's just something missing from the equation on those saws. So if I'm forced to make a suggestion, Brent, I would say, you know, pick up a couple of Japanese saws or a Japanese saw, depending on what you're going to try to do, and give it a shot. And then if you can get your hands on a relatively inexpensive Western saw, you know, you can go out and buy a cheap hard point handsaw at one of the big box stores, and they're really effective at breaking down rough stock, you know, breaking cross-cutting primarily. And you can really get a feel for the technique and just the body mechanics of a Western saw that way with not a whole lot of cost, actually probably cheaper in that case than a Japanese saw. But what I don't recommend, he says in here, getting ready to buy my first set of handsaws. Just like chisels, I don't recommend going and buying a set of three or four or whatever, because you just don't know what you're going to use them for. You know, if you're cutting joinery, that's one thing. But do you need a tenon saw and a sash saw and a dovetail saw right off the bat? No, you really don't. So I would advise going small, buying one saw, and if you can get a Western saw and a Japanese saw, or Western and an Eastern saw, and try it out. I don't think you're going to end up regretting it and saying, "Oh man, I wish I hadn't spent that $38 on this Dozuki." I think there will still always be a home for that in your shop. And until you've really tried both sides, it's really hard to say. You can't really, I'm sure there are some aficionados on one side or the other that will absolutely say, no, you got to buy Western because of X, Y, and Z. And no, you got to buy Eastern because of, you know, A, B, and C. In practice, I don't think it's that big of a difference. And I welcome people to write in and say, you're out of your blooming mind, you fool. Go ahead.
So hold on, writing.
Good
it right
luck,
now.
Brent. Try not to go crazy all at once and buy a whole bunch of saws all at once. Build a couple of projects and let your saw nest grow organically. I think you could say that with just about any tool. So good luck.
Alrighty. What's interesting about this one is I had kind of a similar progression, I think, is I started with a Japanese saw and then cut my first like crappy dovetails with that. And then I gave up on cutting joinery by hand for several years. And in the time, like, I don't know if it was just the way I was using it or what, but I like somehow knocked off like almost all the teeth on that saw. So it was just like a scraper on a stick by the end. And then I was like, I should try this dovetailing thing again. So I bought one of those gents saws, which is horrible.
Mm, yeah.
Like it,
that'll push you towards Japanese saws.
Yeah.
Well, it pushed me towards like a proper Western saw after that. Because then I'm like, I got, Lindsay got me the Bad Axe dovetail saw. I'm like, this actually cuts. But like the gent saw, I don't know if they don't sharpen them. I don't know anything about saws at the time. I don't think I would have that saw still, but it didn't cut for crap. Like you'd be sitting there like back and forth to cut one dovetail cut.
I don't even know how many reciprocations it would have been, but like your wrist starts to hurt because of the way you're holding that handle too. So I don't really recommend anybody buy a gent saw for trying to cut dovetails.
Well, hold on. Can I detour us? I want to detour us for a second.
You are not allowed to do any more detours.
All right, fine.
Okay, fine. What do you need?
I'm just like, when someone made that, can Shannon maybe give us like a little bit of history on like the purpose of that? It just feels like someone who made Western saws saw Japanese saws and go, we can do that too. And then put this straight handle on it that makes it completely stupid. So, and I'm not a hand tool aficionado myself. I don't use a lot of hand saws, but I also have a comparable distaste for the gents saw. And I'm trying to figure out, like, what's the point of that thing?
Well, I think, well, the funny thing is there are some, you know, what you would actually call master craftsmen in the world that swear by that. Guys that love the whole gents saw, but really it was a marketing ploy. It was something, I don't know if I'm going to get my history mixed up, but we'll just say around the Victorian era was really the birth of the middle class. It was the time where finally, you know, people actually had some free time. We weren't working sun up to sundown just to survive. And this middle class had grown up and hobbies really became a thing. So there were people that were looking to, you know, dabble in trades, the gentleman, it's in the name, the key's in the name. And companies started producing this line of tools that would be for that hobbyist. So it was the first time it wasn't for a working craftsman that they were making a saw. It was for somebody that just dabbles in it. And ultimately, they had a price point that had to be met. There were some functionality things that really, you know, no one's going to care. And the more nefarious side of this, one might say, you know, these guys aren't going to know any difference anyway. So it's certainly cheaper to turn a handle and shove it on the end of a tang and go to town than it is to use, you know, split saw nuts, three different saw nuts, you know, a hand carved a block of apple wood or something like that into a wider plate saw. The gent saw in general was just a lower price point item targeting really an uneducated, unskilled market segment. The beginning hobbyist.
Got me.
So that explains that a lot.
So isn't that way today? I mean, look at the price points. They're meant to be an easier entry point of a saw. No, I don't think they sharpen it. I think the teeth are punched and that's maybe as far as it's left. But I mean, there's so many things wrong with that. The geometry of the tooth is generally wrong for the hang angle or zero hang angle, the way that handle is, the hand position, everything. There's so many things that don't work with those saws. And for the guys that love them, I think it was that's all they knew. And they just...
Did they sharpen them?
They got good at it.
Some way differently or something? Because I can't imagine someone that would love that saw where you have to, like, I can make a saw cut for a dovetail in 3 passes with a normal dovetail saw. With the gent saw, you got like 50 passes.
Well, here again, it was designed for somebody, an unskilled worker. So the biggest thing that most people have when they pick up a handsaw is I can't get the thing to start, at least a push Western handsaw. So they ridiculously relax the teeth. The rake on the teeth has been relaxed, which also decreases its speed, its efficiency in cutting. So it makes it glide over the wood and start a lot easier, but it also cuts really slowly.
It's gliding the whole time.
It's not really cutting, it's gliding. So it's easy to start. And because of that lack of a hang angle and the way the handle is held, you have to relax those teeth or it would be nearly impossible to get the thing starting. So it's relaxed so far that it really is just terrible. And they make the pitch way too fine. I mean, most of those things are like 18 points per inch and lower, or I guess higher, you might say. 20, I've seen 22 and 24. It's like, come on. Like my marquetry saw blade is not that fine. Well, some of them are, but it's ridiculous. I mean, I use a fret saw that's 9 points per inch. Why would I want a dovetail saw that's 22 points per inch? And it certainly was never meant to be sharpened or resharpened because who can see that? First of all, I don't care how good your eyes are. 22, 24 points per inch is a bear to sharpen. So it's just one of those instances. It was a time in tool making history where we were targeting a totally different demographic than we've ever looked at before. And a lot of corners were cut. A lot of things were done. You know, I'm sure the turn handle looked really ornate and fancy. And it appealed to that fancy lad with
the fancy
playing
gent
around. Yeah, the fancy gent, the fop, the British fop who wanted to get into woodworking as a laugh.
All right. There well, we go. Got a couple
you
more
asked
questions,
for it, Mark.
Let's people, yeah. Sorry about that.
People say I talk too much, but that. You specifically said history lessons. So.
I'll make mine quick. This will be a quick one for me.
Okay.
This is from Corey. Corey says, I've been listening to the show since you started. Well, that's a long time.
Yeah.
Just wondering how you guys would set up or get better yet organize different items such as drill bits, router bits, journal bits, etc. I have all the original cases that these bits came in, but they're bulky and tend to take up space in my shop. So I'll give my little freeing piece of advice for you. And this will set you free. Get rid of all of those cases that the bits came in. Like it's a hard thing to kind of, to get to that point of like just doing it. Cause like they're cool. Like it has all the information about the bits on it. And like, it's got a little storage thing. You can like hang on a shelf and it looks nice. Get rid of them. Just get over the fact that they look nice. Just submit to the fact that you don't need them and figure out some other like organization system for it. So for the router bits, I did the wall hanging router bit cabinet. You don't have to make a cabinet or anything. You can just make a block of wood with a bunch of holes in it. And that could be your bit holder. It is so much more efficient use of space that way than having all these cases. The one thing I held onto the case idea for was like, what if we need to know like the information about the bit, like what size it is, what the radius is or whatever. I don't care. Like the number of times I actually looked at the information over the last however long I had the bits and cases before going to a cabinet, about zero, like zero times. And this day and age, like if you're buying things online, like you can go back and be like, I ordered this bit at this time. I can go to the product page and all the information on the product page anyway, if you really need it. So don't even worry about it. Some of the router bit manufacturers put the part number on the shank. So you can just look it up too that way. You don't need the cases. For drill bits, I went with a drill index drawer thing, which has like little spaces for all different sizes. I use that mostly for my metalworking twist bits, especially like on the sizes less than an A3. You have like, I bought a pack of 10 and I have like half of them missing and there's like eight of them in there or something. Somehow you buy a pack of 10, you use half of them, there's still eight. I don't know how that math works, but don't worry about it.
Very complex.
You can get those cases that you can like store multiple of the same sizes in the little index and do it that way. For like brad points and things like that, I still have the drill index, which I find to be somewhat useful. At least you know when things are missing, and I only have one set of those. So try to get away from like individual cases for individual things and try to put more things into one case. So
there
to
you
speak,
go.
I guess.
Nice. So. The only time that I do keep a case is really large bits. It's not part of a set. It's just like a 3/4 inch boring bit that I use to make round holes in a workbench. Like that's something that came in its own little sleeve. It's probably best in its own little sleeve because I'm going to, you know, ding it up otherwise.
But those ones, though, the sleeves don't take up much more space than the bit does.
Yeah, it's about the same diameter. Yeah. So.
And they're easier to stack because they're, you know, square or rectangular or whatever versus a round thing.
Right.
Those little plastic cases, the router bits or larger drill bits come in. Ironically, they're great storage for plow plane bits and router plane bits. There you go.
Nice.
There you go.
That's all I have left of my router bits is the cases. And then I've got my plow plane and router plane bits in.
There you go.
True irony.
Okay. I got a question here from Danny. He says, hello. I too am moving very soon. And our new property has a 40 by 60 pole barn. There you go, Matt. You could put
that's chair parts
in there.
That's what I'll be doing here.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to frame in a sub portion of this to use as a wood shop, which YouTube is also going to tell Matt he should do. I made that part up.
We'll not be doing that.
Insulate and heat, but need to keep the other space for general storage, lawn equipment, space to work on vehicles, etc. The problem is I don't even know where to begin as far as what area of the barn and size to frame in and how to conceptualize the best shop tool layout once it's at that stage. Do you know of any resources or have thoughts on how to determine things like overall footprint and designing final shop layout? Thanks for the show and all of your content. Cheers to a new adventure. So this is really challenging. And I think a big part of it is that it is so personal. The amount of stuff you have that you need to store in each section, the type of woodworking that you might do and what kind of space you need for that. This really speaks to me because the challenge that Danny has right now is the same thing that I'm thinking about when I'm outfitting the firehouse. I'm trying to figure out what do I need, and I don't want to commit too early because I could very easily make a mistake. And in his case, if he is constructing interior walls and then, you know, doing things to kind of like add HVAC and like serious commitment, boy, is there a chance of screwing something up and realizing after the fact that you should have made that 5 feet bigger. That's I do not envy that challenge. That's a big thing to think about. I mean, do we have any really solid advice for this? Cause it is so personal.
He needs to start backwards. What is the rest of the space being used for? He says, you know, general storage, lawn equipment, space to work on vehicles. I think you need to figure out how much space you need there. Cause I don't know. I mean, it may be a matter of getting your priorities right, but like, if you could use the whole pole barn for your wood shop, you'd love that, right? But you can't. So try to figure out the largest amount that I can use for the wood shop.
Yeah. Find the restrictions. In other words,
what's the least amount I can get away with on for the other stuff? Kind of start there because you need to know what you have available, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because that's the main constraint. And he's talking about working on vehicles. Obviously, there's size needed there. You need to be able to pull a vehicle in, maybe, if that's what he's talking about.
I would personally put that work on vehicle space inside of the insulated and heated area. Ooh. If you're subdividing up that space. So I would include that space in the shop.
If you're working on them, you want the same comforts as the wood shop.
Yeah.
But you can also have those, the wood shop and the vehicle shop can share space. You can have internal partitions and things like that. There's no reason why those can't be in that same bubble.
Yeah. I think you have to start there and get the overall footprint. You know, so you know your limitations. And then you can start plugging in, you know, this tool goes here, this tool goes there.
Well, and I think there are some... Go ahead.
You know, I think workflow is something that always, when I'm planning out a space, how the wood, where's the wood going to enter the shop? You know, and how that board flows through the shop. If you're, you know, all power tools, where is your milling line and, you know, where is the joinery happening and all that, and kind of thinking in terms of, you know, a single board flowing through the shop, that kind of helps as well.
Yeah. The tool you can use, what I'm going to do is actually use SketchUp. You can find like pre-made models of just about any tool. It won't look like yours, but you can change the color if it makes you feel better. And you could pull that model into a floor plan model of your space. And you could throw these things around. And it really is helpful to see these things in that kind of quasi 3D environment because you can kind of get an idea. You can even take a model of a person. There's that fancy lady in that tiger striped or leopard striped dress or whatever that's always there. Throw her near the table saw and see, you know, how things feel. You can actually get a pretty good idea with these space holders, these placeholders, and move them around a little bit. But always keeping in mind what Shannon said, like, where's the material come in? Where does it get broken down? Where does it then get milled? Where does it then get turned into joints and things like that? And always keep convenient workflow in mind and it'll start to come together. But my best piece of advice is to try to be as flexible as possible. Anything that you do, you're probably going to want to change at some point. So anything that has the potential for flexibility, include that if you have the option, because you want the ability to move things around in the future and not lock yourself in at this very, very early stage. It's a challenge, no matter what.
Put it all on wheels.
I know Todd is like, well, what's your current shop like? If you think about it that way, like what space are you working in now? Mm-hmm. What do you like about that layout? Do you like that layout at all? Is it working for you? What's not working for you? And I think a lot of the problem with this type of question is like, it's almost like I've never done woodworking before. I have all this space. I want to establish a brand new shop. I have no idea how I work, what tools I use. That's probably not the case. I'm assuming that they've been doing some woodworking some extent somewhere else for some time.
Sure.
So they might have a good idea of what the heck they build, how they build it, what kind of things they like.
Hopefully.
You know, like for me, when I moved, I put everything exactly the same place because I really like the layout that I have now. I'm very happy with that. So I don't know, like if I were to move to a different shop again, like I don't think I'd be like, oh, I gotta shift everything all around all differently because I still really like that layout. So.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, that's why it's personal, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's a good starting point, at least. I remember when you did that. We talked about like just moving the layout to a different space and then just giving it a little bit more room between each thing.
Yep, now there's more breathing room. That's all it was. Yeah. And like, as I think about like these bigger and bigger shops, I'm like, well, I really like the size of what I have now. It would be nice to be a little bigger, to have a little more breathing room. So like if I wanted to have a camera person, it'd be okay. Yeah. It'd be enough aisle space for two people to walk around in there at the same time. But as far as like the stuff I make, where it's like kind of smaller-ish furniture, like it's a really good size. We're not taking like, it doesn't take you forever to walk across the shop to go use a table saw, for instance. It's like, it's right there. Everything is kind of really close together and really efficiently laid out to be within footsteps of each other.
Yeah.
Versus like, I have all the space, so I got to spread out as far as possible. It's not that efficient though.
That's
like,
a mistake.
Do you want to spend all your day walking around?
Yeah. You know? There is an optimal kind of range for distances between tools, and just getting more space for the sake of space and putting the same tools in just a giant space. Like, you need other things to do with that space or more tools to occupy that space. Cause otherwise it's just it's wasted motion.
Or unless you're
just trying to get your steps in
to go from one workstation to the other, or golf cart.
On your hoverboard all day in the shop. Between stations.
I like, you know, back when we used to write blog posts, I actually wrote a blog post on the merits of elbow room in your shop, because you see so many of these, especially in garage shops, just, you know, it's hyper efficient. Everything's stacked in and touching one another. You know, the drill press is butted right up against the router table, which is butted right up against the table saw. And there is some real benefit to just having like that extra foot of elbow room around, you know, a workstation of some sort. It really, if nothing else, it makes your mind a little bit more at ease. It's not quite so tense because just, everything's packed in there. I mean, sometimes we don't have an alternative, but yeah, elbow room is a good idea. Lebensraum, as the Nazis would say.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today. Family owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high quality and innovative woodworking tools.
Oh my God.
Finishing supplies. There's a lot of white space in the document there. Hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com and use the code WOODTALK, all one word, to receive free shipping on most orders over $49. And remember to head to rockler.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
There we go. It's not white space, it's Lebensraum.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah. German expression. It doesn't have to be a Nazi expression, but
okay,
yeah, it was coined by them anyway. if you're still interested in listening to the show, or want to contribute to future shows, please send us questions. We love your questions. The show is built on your questions, so go to woodtalkshow.com. that's where you can fill out a contact form, or if you just want to pop into your email box thingy and send an email to woodtalkshow@gmail.com. If you reach out to us via Instagram, then you get to talk to the lovely Margaret, and she will cull your questions from the herd, put them together in a nice little email, and then she sends us an email to woodtalkshow@gmail.com. So all kind of the same thing.
It's up to you. Save a step and email us yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah,
unless you really want to talk to Margaret. She's a nice lady. You might want to talk to
her. She's actually great. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you for listening, everybody, and we will catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Auf Wiedersehen.